are listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
Facts and friends, he says what he wants, ain't holding nothing back. Got the recipe for life, and he's inspiring. He's not scared of any topic, from textile to gossip. Listen and to hear what Max is to share. LA Talk Radio, this is Max and Friends.
LA Talk Radio, this is Max and Friends. I'm your host, Max Tucci. Well, welcome back to another Sunday night edition. I feel like I haven't been here in a while. You know, my life has been going crazy, and I know I can't leave you all out there stranded. So here I am tonight, live in the flesh, and I'm glad to be here. Speaking about being live and in the flesh, well, today is Easter. So happy Easter to all of those who celebrate. And, you know, tonight we're going to have some interesting conversation about the flesh and rising from the dead. Did it all really happen? I know we've had this discussion before, and I know you're all intrigued by it as much as I am, because, you know, there's so many people out there that don't believe Jesus really happened, that don't believe the Bible is even legitimate. So we're going to talk about it tonight with our guest. He's a friend to Max and Friends, Joseph Lumpkin from Fifth Estate Publishing. You all know him. He's written many, many of books, one of my favorite. And, you know, he's going to be here tonight telling us really what happened that day, that Resurrection Sunday, that week that came to the death of Jesus and then he rose again. So I want you to be interactive with me, at Max Tucci on Twitter. Let's talk about it. Joseph Lumpkin, you can follow at Fifth Estate Book on Twitter, of course, and let's talk about it. But, you know, I just want you all to have an open mind because, you know, that's where we stand. We got to just, like Majaya said, just breathe it all in. You know, Majaya from Kashi Ashram. So that's the thing, Jai Ma, by the way. But that's the thing, you know, we've got to just be in a position in life where we can step aside for a moment from the beliefs that we were taught, okay, and kind of just let the spirit take control. Do we even have a spirit? There's so much we need to talk about tonight on Max and Friends. But before we go there, do you know what I want to talk to you all about real quick? I just jumped. I'm not even supposed to be talking about this right now because I've got a show to do. But I am so addicted to Blackboard Wars on OWN. Have you all seen it? I want to know your thoughts about that show because I was literally just watching it before I came into the studio and I was like running late because I had to like watch the season finale. The show is so intense. So let me know what you think about Blackboard Wars on OWN, all right? But before we go into any further portion of this show, we're going to go into a fabulous song, one that I love so much by Sharon Agati, called Lead Me to the Water. Now, I want you to listen to the lyrics because you might be set free. Lead Me to the Water on Max and Friends. And when we're back, Dr. Joseph Lumpkin, and we're talking about Jesus. Was he drugged before he rose from the dead, or was he even dead? Stay tuned to Max and Friends on LA Talk Radio.
Can't turn, oh, don't they? Will you lead me?
Talk Radio. This is Max and Friends. I'm your host, Max Tucci. That was Sharon Agati. Lead me to the water. Were y'all led to the water? Did y'all find that place that we call spiritual? Well, I hope you did, because tonight we're talking about Jesus on the cross, Resurrection Sunday. Dr. Joseph Lumpkin is back with us, and we're talking about a lot of things here tonight on Max and Friends. Welcome back, Joseph. How you been, my friend?
Hi, Max. I've been well. Happy Easter. How are you?
Well, happy Easter to you. I'm doing very well. We're glad to have you back. You know, you are a theological expert here on Max and Friends. And how many books have you written now thus far for those who are tuning into the show and don't know you yet?
I believe we're up to about 30.
And keeping going, right?
Yes. Every time a topic comes out and seems of interest, we tackle it full force.
Full force. Now, before we get into the show topic today, what's going on in your life? Let our listeners know.
Well, in Alabama, we've had a lot of bad weather and a lot of high winds and a little damage here, but everybody's happy and healthy and getting along fine, thank you.
And what's going on for Fifth Estate Publishing?
Fifth Estate has taken on a couple of new authors that are tackling the teen fantasy series, and we released about, you can call this Providence or whatever you want to call it, about 6 months before the Pope resigned. We put out the book of Malachi, which is the 112 prophecies that show that this pope may be the last one.
Do you really think that's the case?
Actually, personally, I don't. I think that the prophecies were probably fabricated. There are a lot of people who really, really follow these prophecies, but you know, they if you track them back, they were supposed to be published around 1300s. They were found supposedly in the mid-1500s. And if you look back, the popes that were between the time of St. Malachi's existence and about the 1500s, 1530 or so, fit perfectly, just like a glove. I mean, you couldn't ask for better prophecies. And then after about 1550 to 1600, they start to fall apart. You have to stretch them to make them fit, have to search for connections. What we actually think happened was in that particular time, there was a cardinal that was vying to be pope. And one of his friends happened to be the one that found these prophecies. But if you look at the prophecies, they really pointed toward the fact that this particular cardinal should have probably been pope according to the prophecies. And so we think it was some really sleight-of-hand propaganda. How things like that fall into theology, isn't it?
And into everyday life, especially with the politics as well.
But
politics,
that's
a
religion,
whole other show.
Yes, politics and religion certainly go together.
You know, I was going to say, is there really a separation between church and state, Joseph?
There is not. There is not. You find the same people that are politicians that are preachers and evangelists a lot of times.
Well, you know, let's get into the show now, because you've opened up with saying Happy Easter to me. But now I've got to ask you, was Easter really an event that took place where people celebrated, or was it just something recently made up? And how long can we go back to find out when the first Easter celebration took place?
Ooh, those are loaded questions. I'll give you the thumbnail sketch. The name Easter came from Oster, which is a Teutonic or Saxon goddess of spring. And when we being Christians, when Christians took over and converted the Saxon population, of course, the language morphs and changes as time goes on, and Easter became Yoster, and Yoster, I should say, Oster became Yoster, and Yoster became Easter. And in 325, the church officially changed the celebration from a pagan celebration to what we now know as Easter. So that's how the time was set. And it was also connected to Passover, because a lot of Christians looked at it as an extension of Passover. And so you had the Oster celebration happening at the vernal equinox, and the Passover happening at about the same time. And so you had this mixture of those two pagan and Christian principles coming about. And so that's how we got the name and the time. Now, the idea of resurrection, that's very tricky, because happening at the same time that Jesus was around was a god called Mithras. And Mithras was a god of light and wisdom and war. Only in the Roman mind could that all go together. But that god was the favorite god of the Roman warriors, the Roman soldiers. And Mithras was killed and resurrected, and the death of that god atoned for the sins of that deity's people. And so you had this amazing parallel going on at that particular time. So there's a lot of people who think that Christianity may have borrowed this. It may have come into us just like Easter came in as a mixture. However, you know, this show is not to tear down anyone's Christianity. It's simply to open up the historicity and make you look at the whole picture. At the end of the day, the whole thing is about what you believe is real and what connects you to God.
Right.
Because this idea of resurrection, you know, we only are nibbling at the edges of it here, because Easter is not only about Jesus coming back from the dead. It is the hope within us, not only of eternal life, but as power over life itself is within us. In the Gospel of Thomas tells us that if we can bring that forth, it will save us. So this whole thing is not about Easter eggs and even resurrection. You know, it's really about resurrecting the Christ in us. That's what it's all about.
and really just turning into ourselves. You know, I always say, Ma Jaya, who's a great spiritual leader, she once said that when I was searching for God, I found him in myself. You know, and yeah. I think that that's what today is really about. It's tuning out all of the marketing aspect of what we have made Easter to become and really tuning into yourself to say, you know what, if there is a God and if he is greater than I, then why isn't he in me? You know, and I think a lot of people realize that, you know, I think we're so scared to say that God is within me or that I am God-like, you know, because of tradition and how we were raised. But really, I think the simplicity of who God is, if he created us, and that's the road we're taking tonight, is that, you know what? He's in me. So we're going to get into that a little bit more into the show. But what I want to talk about is that, you know, there's a lot of, let's say, contradiction with religion always. I mean, that's just the nature of the beast, let's call it. And the beast, I think, likes the nature of confusion. So it's going to live, I think, in religion and talk about it for years to come. But, you know, we have Easter and then we have astrology. And astrology plays a huge, huge aspect in Easter because of the spring equinox. So let's talk about how the moon really does affect when we celebrate the resurrection.
Well, of course, we have the idea of this God of spring bringing forth life. And so here we are at the equinox, which is the balancing point. You know, there's two equinoxes, vernal and autumnal. And this is the balance point between life and death. And this particular full moon represents that balancing point, the bringing forth of life and stealing it away from death. And that is woven into the story of the resurrection, because if you look at the whole picture, he's supposed to have gone down to hell itself, preached for 3 days, overcame death, and brought life out with him, life for us, spiritual life for himself. And it goes toward this balancing point of this equinox that we're experiencing right now.
Absolutely. Well, you know, I want to talk about a few things tonight here on Max and Friends and LA Talk Radio. We've got Joseph Lumpkin with us tonight, and we're talking about Easter, Resurrection Sunday. We're going to talk about, was Jesus drugged on the cross? There's a lot we're going to discuss tonight, so I'm glad you're here joining us, people, because I love your tweets. So keep tweeting us at Max Tucci and let us know your questions about Jesus and what are you really going through today, and what was your day all about? Now, I want to get into the Bible, and according to Paul, if Christ has not been raised, your faith is futile. That's in 1 Corinthians 15 and 17. Is it true that our faith is futile, Joseph Lumpkin?
I'm afraid that I disagree with Paul. As a matter of fact, I think that Paul may have kind of hijacked Christianity in a way. If you look at the Didache, the preaching and teaching before Paul, where James, the brother of Jesus, was in charge at that time and the heir apparent, we have no such idea. So this is a Pauline, we call it a Pauline statement, and it's his interpretation based on his view of Judaism. And the reason I say that is this: if Jesus came and taught and was a great teacher and was sacrificed for our sins and did not come back, really, what difference would that have made? Mm-hmm. Christianity has said to its followers, this is a stamp of approval. This idea of the resurrection is God's stamp of approval, that everything Jesus said was true, and that he really is the Messiah. But that never was expected. The idea of the Messiah in the Old Testament was never that he was going to be sacrificed by God for our sins and then resurrected. The idea was that he was going to be a warrior king. Now, it didn't turn out the way they expected, but that is indeed what they got. He was simply a spiritual warrior instead of a physical warrior. Mm. But I disagree with Paul there. You know, a lot of spiritual leaders, and I'm not trying to put Jesus on the same level as Buddha or one of those spiritual leaders, but they were not resurrected. And yet, their message stands on its own. So, you know, we have an idea here as to...
Well, I'm going to ask you a question there.
Jesus is. Yeah.
You know, did Jesus really, rise from the dead? You know, there's so many stories, and it's like, who do you really believe, you know? And that's what really I think the importance of tonight's show is, because there's a lot of people listening out there who have these questions, like, and I'm going to play it very simple, who say, you know what, Max, Joseph, this is all bullshit. What really happened? And where's the evidence? Do we have evidence that Jesus rose, or was he drugged on the cross?
Indeed. There are several theories, and let's just go through them real quick. Let's kind of, if you allow me just a moment to kind of put in the framework here.
Absolutely.
First of all, it's not right to use the Bible to prove the Bible. It would be like putting me on the stand only and saying, asking me questions and expecting me to be straightforward. We have to look outside the Bible to actually prove the Bible, just like we would in any other court of law. Now,
before we continue that, quick question. What language originally was the Bible written in? Do we have any proof of an original language?
Well, we think it was in Aramaic, and there's also Coptic books, books in Hebrew, and books in Greek. So those languages
and then who,
tend to make up.
Yeah. Who could have translated that to where we are today, and how are the stories – could the stories have changed?
The stories indeed did change. We have differences between Matthew, Mark, and Luke, sometimes vast differences within just a resurrection story. Now, part of the problem is that we don't have any true witnesses. And what I mean by that is that Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John probably weren't written by Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. We gave them that name and ascribed the names to them. The books were probably written around 50 to 75 A.D. Now, follow this because the math is a little complicated, but the life expectancy at that particular time, depending on the sources that you read, were between 40 and 59 years old. So let's just say that the average life expectancy was 59 years old. The disciples were probably Jesus' age thereabouts. He died in 33 A.D. They were written around 50 to 75 A.D. Those guys would have had to have been between 80 and 90 years old. We probably are in the second or third transmission of that particular story, and I won't call it a myth because it's a story. It's called a fable or a myth if you wish, but that transmission is like telephone, the game telephone. You're not going to be able to get a true transmission. Then it was written down, and then it was passed around. We think that Mark probably was the first one that wrote the kind of framework that the others used. Uh-huh. They built their stories off of that with their memories on their eyewitnesses. And Luke puts it really simply. He says, got this story. Now, we know that Luke wasn't written by Luke, but the book of Luke says, I've got this story. I investigated it because it needed to be told. So I went out and I interviewed people, and here's what I got. So he is a writer that did not witness it and is now looking at the second, probably, generation of tellers of the story, and that's where we are right now.
Uh-huh. Were these even their real names? Were Mark and Luke, were those their real names?
Well, they are transliterations. For example, Jesus and Joshua are the same name. Uh-huh. They just went through, Jesus went through Yeshua, and then it went through Jesus as we changed language from one to the next.
So what would Jesus' real name be if we were all going back to the beginning of this writing? What would, because we always hear, El Shaddai, we always hear different names, Jehovah Jireh. What would Jesus as the son of Mary's real name be if we were at the beginning of time with him?
Yeshua ben Yosef, Jesus son of Joseph.
So it's simple Hebrew name, basically.
Yes, Yeshua, which is the same as Joshua, mm-hmm. son of Joseph, yeah.
And then when did Jesus become his name?
Jesus became his name as it was transliterated from the Hebrew into Greek and into English. Or I should say into Latin and into English. They don't have a J in the Latin language. It was an I pronounced as a Y, and then it goes through, and you end up with Jesus at the end of the day in English. Or Jesus, because H does a J is an H sound in Spanish, right. So it becomes Jesus.
So is there Jesus, a possibility, though? Is there a possibility that Jesus might not even be the real name?
Well, no, probably Jesus was his real name, however you wish to pronounce it, whatever language. But we have several Jesuses that were dying on the cross at about the same time.
Right.
We have actually history of three Jesuses within about 50 years being crucified. So it would be like, I don't know if you've heard of the Wayne factor, but a decade or two ago, the preponderance of the name Wayne being the first or middle name ending up in jail or in prison was like, you must be kidding. What's up with this name? We call it the Wayne factor. There was a Jesus factor at one time. You had these people that were, they were Jews. They were trying to get a foot up in the Roman Empire. They were trying to break free, and the Romans were putting them down, and Jesuses were dying left and right.
This is all new. This is the first time I've heard of this, so I'm just taking this all in. But keep on going, because this is quite the life class, we like to call it here on Max and Friends on LA Talk Radio. So tell us more about the many Jesuses that were dying on the cross.
Well, some were, and I don't really have at my fingertips the entire history, but some were, they were political. Some were religious. Mm-hmm. Some were thieves. They were different things. There was one gentleman who was very politically active. You really can't call Jesus, our Jesus, all that political, although his message was just earth-shattering. I mean, he was killed by saying things like, turn the other cheek, forgive those who hate you, reach for heaven, not for earth. Jesus said that the kingdom is inside of you. That flew in the face of the powers that be that needed to control.
Mm-hmm.
So, now,
with the knowledge that we now have that Jesus was basically a very common name then in Hebrew, how do we know that the Jesus that was put on the cross was really the right Jesus?
That's an interesting question. There is actually a theory called the imposter theory, and I suppose we should run through these. Now, keep in mind that your faith is your own. We're not trying to break down anyone's faith. We're just looking at the conspiracy theories at the time based on what was going on. There are actually two imposter theories, but basically one says that Judas had this all worked out, and he kissed the wrong person. Uh-huh. Because remember, he had to identify Jesus. Uh-huh. So they didn't know what he looked like, and they didn't know where he was. He had to actually walk up and kiss him, and that was the signal for them that this was the right person at the right time, go get him. Now, there are holes in that theory, of course, because there's a saying that if you if three people know a secret, to keep the secret, you got to kill two people. People can't keep their mouths shut. So you have to have a willing target to save the master. He has to go through all of this stuff. And then, of course, Jesus appears, and you have the resurrection because of this imposter theory. Now, the book of Judas, the Gospel of Judas, tells us, if you want to believe the Gospel of Judas, that it was truly Jesus, and that Judas was told to do this to actually, he was granted a special place in heaven because he was the most trusted person. And Jesus used him by asking him, please betray me at this particular time, at this particular place, so that this prophecy will work out and I can leave this mortal coil and do what I've got to do as the next step.
Well, speaking of doing what we got to do on the next step, Ronan, what's everybody listening to right now?
LA Talk Radio, this is Max and Friends.
LA Talk Radio, this is Max and Friends. I'm your host, Max Tucci. We've got Joseph Lumpkin here with us tonight, and we're discussing Jesus and the cross. Was he drugged? Was he really there? What's his real name? If you're just tuning in, we've got some of the questions here answered for you tonight. And again, keep in mind that faith and believing is in your heart. We're just opening up that are out there, that are discussions. So if you want to write to me, hit me up at Twitter and be public about it. On that note, Joseph, we were discussing?
Yes. Well, the other is the stolen body theory. Mm-hmm. And this actually is addressed in the scriptures itself. So it has some credence within the Bible itself. Because Pilate said, wait a minute, this guy said that he may rise again in 3 days. I don't want these guys stealing the body. Post a couple of guards.
Mm-hmm.
Which they did. But the theory says that these guards were insiders or were given a little bit of cash, and they looked the other way, and the body was stolen.
Now, who wrote these theories?
These theories, a lot of them came in about the 1800s, where we were kind of coming into our own as far as theosophy, the meeting of science and religion. They were, some of them have been around for a while. The imposter or the stolen body theory has been around for a very long time because it's actually hinted at in the scriptures itself. So you have people who wish to deny the resurrection. This is one of the things that they pick up on.
Well, didn't they also pick up on, speaking about picking up, that Mary picked up the body, Mary Magdalene picked up the body of Jesus, and that they ended up into an area that we call France today. Is there any truth to that story, and did they really start a family?
That goes with the drug theory. So the Bible tells us that at the last moments when he was really suffering, a person put a sponge with myrrh and vinegar on it and put it up to its mouth, and he drank out of it, and that was supposed to ease the pain. And one of the theories is that that really was a drug that was a drug that caused catatonic behavior, and he passed into an unconscious state. They thought he was dead. They took him down. Jesus walked out. He and Mary went to the area that's now known France. They had a daughter that continues the Holy Bloodline, and this is one of the things in Holy Blood, Holy Grail that is touched upon.
Uh-huh.
Now, every one of these theories has its problem. Like, for example, if you really want to believe the Bible story, then you have to say, well, wait a minute. He appeared, and he had a hole in his side and a hole in his hands.
Uh-huh.
And Thomas put his fingers in it. So, we're talking about some major wounds and walking around with a hole near your Achilles tendon and in your hands and in your side. Not a pretty sight.
But could have been the body double.
It could have been the body double. But, of course, again, we have a problem with a person walking around with a lot of wounds.
Uh-huh.
It's not impossible.
Uh-huh.
But Here's the whole thing. You have to take the conspiracy theories with as much faith as you take the story in the Bible. Equal amount of faith. It's just harder for someone to say this man was resurrected by the power of God than it is to say these humans figured out a way to do this. And it may not make a lot of sense. You might have some, the Bible says that the spear threw him and blood and water came out. But here again, you're depending on the Bible as a witness to itself, which in the court of law, you couldn't do.
Uh-huh. But now let's talk about the court of law and the Bible, because, there's laws that we have with the Constitution, that have changed, that have not changed. And really, the Bible is a book that has changed so much over the original, let's call it, printing of it. So with that being said, we have laws here that change on a daily basis. So why is it that laws that are in the Bible don't change to adapt to today's society?
Ooh. Religion doesn't change very quickly at all. Religion, by its very nature, is a crystalline structure. And that's why a lot of people, including myself, say that spirituality is from God. Uh-huh. Religion, that's from another place.
From man. Well, yeah. It's true because, you know, if we go into the King James Version of the Bible, I mean, clearly you can see from all the different translations such a dramatic change. So really, like, what do we as readers of the Bible, okay, because as believers it's a whole different thing, but as readers of the Bible, how can we really say, okay, this is true, this isn't true, this I'll take, this I won't take, and why are there so many contradictions between each book in the Bible?
That's a lot of questions. I think, if you don't mind, I'll start with the truth of the Bible. I was going to say inerrancy, but I don't believe in the inerrancy of the Bible. I believe in the inerrancy of the Spirit behind it. I think that when it was given in the original translation, if you will, the original communication, spirit to spirit, that uh-huh. there was truth there. But, for example, there's a book in Branson, Missouri. There's only about five or six of these Bibles left called the Adulterer's Bible. It would be in a gambling town, wouldn't it, where it says, thou shalt commit adultery. Thou shalt commit adultery. And I tell my wife, I could live on that. Okay. I could do that, sure. Of course, I get elbowed in the ribs, but there you go. These Bibles are not inerrant. They go through printings. They go through translations. They go through changes. They go through additions by the very scribes that are supposed to keep them perfect. Our Lord's Prayer is a perfect example. In the older renditions, in the older books that we find, the end of the Lord's Prayer is missing, the doxology. For thine is the kingdom and the power and the glory is not there. It was added later by a scribe who simply thought that the Lord's Prayer fell flat and it needed a flourish at the end. So we are dealing with that kind of thing all along because men, you know, they do really crazy things and they mess around with sacred text because, well, they can. Their interpretations make a difference. They will believe one certain thing. They will come across a verse that might contradict it or might not be clear. They will change the wording so that it fits their own theology. Uh-huh. You know, for example, the Jehovah's Witness do not believe that there is a Trinity. Which, uh-huh. you know, you can argue that. I will argue the Trinity. I do not believe that there was an original Trinity. But I do believe that there's a Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. I just don't know that they interact.
So is that a contradiction like the Bible?
Yeah, because they translated it that in John that the Word is with God and the Word was a God. God. They added the letter A in there. It became an entirely different subject.
And then today, most churches say the Word was God.
Yes.
You know, so that little, we pick and choose.
That little letter means that it's a distinct thing, separate from the others.
Absolutely. Now, you know what? This is like, you know, we've got to come to an understanding for people. Because this is what I really say. You know, regardless of all the different changes of the stories and what's good for someone and what's bad for someone else and what makes sense to someone and what doesn't make sense to someone else, you know, all of that stuff is great. You know, it's part of communication with each other and conversation with each other. But I think what Jesus, and this is just my personal belief, and we'll see if you agree with me, of all the teachings, the main teaching was love. Would you agree?
I would absolutely agree. He reduced everything to just two simple statements. Love the other person as yourself, love your neighbor as yourself, and love God with all your heart.
Why is it then, if that was really, let's say, Christ's mission statement, okay? If that was the mission statement, then why do all the other things matter?
They don't. They don't. They don't. They don't. And that is the crux of the whole matter. If we could simply put everything aside but that one statement that you made, what else does it matter? It doesn't matter, not at all. If we really concentrated on that, but here's the catch. We can't do it. We can't bring ourselves to do it. And so we end up focusing on everything else.
When all we need to focus on is love.
Yeah, exactly.
No matter how many songs are written, no matter how many Hallmark cards are written, right? We always have to go back to fighting one another and to just, I mean, it's so sad that really this man who, you know, today a lot of people, 1.7 billion people, if not more, celebrate today. And they really miss the purpose of his mission statement. You know, we can go into a charity and you have the mission statement written right on the wall. And then we can go into the Bible and we have books from the Old Testament to the New Testament and contradictions and stories and translations and all different people that weren't really named, those people who wrote those stories. But then when the person who came here, who was born to Mary and Joseph, the Son of God, he says, listen, love one another like I have loved you. Why can't we just take that simple statement and erase all the other pages and just make that a one-page Bible?
I think the answer is it would be too simple. And we actually are crude, violent creatures because we can't get in touch with his teaching. And it becomes a circular logic. He basically, okay, look at it this way. If he came, if God came to earth, he came because of love. If God died for us, he died because of love. If God resurrected Jesus, he did it because of love. If Jesus ascended and God accepted him into heaven, it was because of love. If we are here following his teaching, we follow the teaching of love. If we end up in heaven, it is because he loved us. I personally believe that the Bible is true when it says he died for all men. So I think that he died for all men. And just because I am incapable of bringing forth his message so that you will believe it, that puts the onus on me. That's not right, or any other preacher or teacher. So I think that he took that out of our hands. I think that I believe in reconciliation of all beings. I think in the end, he will show himself to everyone. They will know his love, and they will come to a unity with God. In the end, we will all be with him because we will see him as he really is, because he loves us.
Because of love. Now, listen, speaking of love, obviously we have the hate and fighting. Was there ever a recorded story of Jesus ever getting into a fight?
Yeah, well, there's a story of him turning over the money changers' tables and just raising mortal hell because they had defiled the temple. Uh-huh. He did say in the end of the whole thing, as he was going away, he said, you know, everybody should carry a knife. Now, that's a pretty crazy statement. Everyone should carry a knife. Everybody get yourself a knife. He knew that the time was coming that it was going to be very, very rough out there. Because if they treated him that way, they were also going to come after his followers.
Well, they also say that our tongue is the sharpest knife we have, right?
Yes, and that is why in the Old Testament it says that gossip is the same as murder.
Mm-hmm. But in the New Testament, what does it say about that?
Well, it says that we should bless those who curse us.
And that's exact. It's just such a beautiful bouquet of contradiction.
Yeah.
So, with that said, if Jesus were to come back right now, at this moment, and had 2 minutes to speak, what do you think his words would be to man?
I think his first sentence was, "What are you doing?" And why? And the second would be, didn't I tell you to love one another and to love God as I loved you?
So with that message, and with all of your experience and all of the books you've written and all the authors that you're bringing in, and just daily experience in life, how would you say that task can happen?
I would say it's one another. I would say it's one of the most difficult tasks that we have before us, because the first thing that we have to do is to realize that we are the same as the least of our brothers, that there is no difference in our, no matter what our state of life is, our standard of living, where we live, how we live, we are all the same. And when we realize that we are as bad as they are, they being everybody else, then we also realize that they are as precious as we are. And if we can look at that through the lens of God, you know, a friend of mine once said that if you sin one time less than me or not at all, and I'm a sinner, it is like children trying to jump to the moon. 2 or 3 inches is not going to make any difference in those millions of miles. We've missed it. And we come to that conclusion that we're all the same, and we see ourselves in others, you know, I see you, I see God in you, I see me in you, then we'll forgive, we'll forget, we'll move on, we'll love.
We'll love, and just like 1 Corinthians 13 says, the way of love, if I speak with human eloquence and angelic ecstasy, but don't love, I am nothing but the creaking of a rusty gate. If I speak God's word with power, revealing all his mysteries and making everything plain as day. And if I have faith that says to a mountain, jump, and it jumps, but I don't love, I am nothing. If I give everything I own to the poor and even go to the stake to be burned as a martyr, but I don't love, I've gotten nowhere. So no matter what I say, what I believe, and what I do, I'm bankrupt without love. And I think that's really the message of what Easter's about, what Jesus is about, what life is about, and what love is about, people. So on that note, from this whole conversation that Joseph and I had today, the most important thing to take is not the theories, not the disbeliefs, not the beliefs, but the knowledge and the way of love. Wouldn't you agree, Joseph Lumpkin?
Absolutely, Max. Let us go forth and resurrect the Christ spirit in each of us. That's what Easter is all about, his love.
And resurrect love. On that note, everyone, we've got to wrap this show up. So I thank Joseph Lumpkin for being here tonight. Where can they go to find more information about you, Joseph?
www.fifthestatepub.com.
And fifth is spelled out, F-I-F-T-H, estatepub.com. Joseph, thank you for being here. I look forward to your new books. The Way of Love should be another one.
Absolutely, Max. Thanks for having me.
Have a great night and happy Resurrection of Love Day.
Yes, indeed. You too.
Cheers. Good night. Well, everyone, on that note, I'm going to wish you all a good night, a wonderful week ahead. I'm going to Colorado this week to celebrate Ruben's 21st birthday. I'm going out there, and we're going to have a good time. And I wish you all love this week, people. Love one another is the message, the way of love. Don't be bankrupt. Be rich in love, rich in spirit. And whatever your beliefs are today, believe one thing, that love really will change the world. As cliche and tacky and cheesy as it might sound, it's the truth. So speaking of the truth, everyone, I love you all for listening. I'm not here next week, but we'll have a great replay. I'll be back the following week. We've got great shows coming ahead to you here on Max and Friends and LA Talk Radio. I've got to say a big shout out and a thank you to Sarah and Melissa. They had us over the other night. We had a good old time, some barbecuing, some really good ribs. There was really no barbecue, but the ribs were really good. So figure that riddle out. Speaking of riddles, is the Bible a riddle? Do y'all think so? Or are y'all just happy that we came to a conclusion that love is the way? Tune in to Max and Friends every Sunday night here on LA Talk Radio. Speaking of LA Talk Radio, I hope you get the LA Talk Radio app. It's free, and you can take me to bed with you every Sunday night at 8 p.m., 11 p.m. Eastern Time. Again, I love you all for listening. Ronan, thank you for being here as always. And life, take it to the max, my friends. Have a good night. This is Max Tucci. I'm signing off for Max and Friends on LA Talk Radio. Good night, y'all. I love you.